Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 29th of March. Monday at 9 is all things political, and we have a lot to talk about today. The president made a weekend trip to Afghanistan. We'll be talking about that. There were some interesting articles over the weekend about where it is the president will go now. Does he have his mojo back? Days after the health care vote, he completed an arms control accord with Russia, which we talked about last Friday. We'll look at whether or not he kind of likes this lesson of victory. He also did what he learned from the victory on health care. He also made some recess appointments. We had talked about that issue one day last week. One of the articles in the New York Times yesterday said how Mr. Obama applies the lessons of health care to other issues will be a big part of determining his success. Tenacity isn't necessarily enough. There has to be patience and a willingness at some point to draw a line in the sand. We'll talk about the Tea Party meetings, which took place over the weekend. Sarah Palin going to many, many cities where the anger is coming from. And we'll look at immigration. We will look at a number of other issues that you would like to bring up as well this hour of the program. Our phone number, as it always is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And our guest is Professor Theda Skocpol, Victor S. Thomas Professor of Government and Sociology at Harvard University. She has been elected to membership in all three major U.S. interdisciplinary honor societies. Her work covers a broad spectrum of topics, including comparative politics and American politics. She has written extensively and has recently launched new projects on the development of U.S. higher education and on the transformation of U.S. federal policies in the Obama era. Professor Skocpol, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Ah, it's my pleasure. Nice to be here.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So does the president have his mojo back?
Yes, I think he does. You know, Barack Obama has always taught us again and again that he likes to lay back for quite a while.
Yes.
And let other actors, in the healthcare case Congress, take the lead, do his best to reach out to opponents. But when he gets pushed up against the wall, he comes out fighting and is pretty firm and strong.
Yeah. Why does he follow that strategy? It seems to me as though he did that during his campaign as well.
Yeah, I mean, the reasons may be a little different in the campaign from now. I mean, in the campaign, he obviously was dealing with a fierce opponent, an effective opponent, and a popular opponent, Hillary Clinton, in the Democratic primary, and he wanted to respect those he would need in the general election. And he wanted to appeal to many people who didn't want the most extreme rhetoric or the most extreme attack politics. In a way, the same thing has been true in his presidency. He may not have been as naive as some people think about the chances that Republicans or conservative interest groups would join him in shaping key legislation. He got disillusioned, I think, about that even with the stimulus legislation early in his presidency. But he knows that a lot of Americans in the middle want the effort to be made. And so, and he also knew that he had to have Democrats fashioning bills in the various committees. He couldn't do that for them. Congress votes. He doesn't. And so he waited until the very last minute, really, to assert himself.
Right. He also had, and I think her effort was quite extraordinary, the hard work and the political skills of Nancy Pelosi.
I really agree with that. I mean, I think that after the Scott Brown upset in Massachusetts, things were really falling apart. And in many ways, the biggest obstacle to health reform was the profound distrust of House Democrats for Senate Democrats. And Nancy Pelosi did a masterful job of finding exactly what she could get a majority for in the House, and pushing Obama and Senate Leader Harry Reid to get guarantees that the Senate would use the majority process to make the kinds of changes that would ordinarily be made in a conference between the two houses. She really is, along with Obama, the most important actor in all of this.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Not only was health care passed, it was quite a week for the president. He also had significant, I guess you could say, arms control accord with Russia. It had been stalled for some time, but that was signed on Friday.
Yeah, and then he went off to Afghanistan, which
yes.
I think was a brilliant move because, you know, Americans across the political spectrum respect his handling of the Afghanistan issue, and he needed also to deliver a message in person to the Afghan president and to reach out to the troops in Afghanistan. So quite a week. I mean, I doubt he'll have very many weeks in his presidency that'll match this one.
Right. Can you imagine going to Afghanistan just for the weekend? Oh my gosh, it's a long trip.
It isn't like when most of us fly, we're in the middle seat, unable to move. I mean, he can work on his plane, but yeah, you know, I mean, it was pretty impressive that he did that.
Right. This has been called, though, the area that he could really run into trouble on, that Afghanistan, some say, is a little bit better, but the corruption in the country, we're doing an hour on it. From one of the authors of the Newsweek piece, the cover story next hour of the program, that this is a big job, that we could be mired down and trying to make this place better, and it's not getting a whole lot better.
Well, I think that's right, and I doubt very much that the Obama administration, though, thinks it's going to turn Afghanistan into a model democracy. I think they're trying to root out the most extreme Al-Qaeda and Taliban supporters, and they're trying to get the Afghans to behave, and the Pakistanis, to behave well enough to stabilize the areas that they use American troops to clean up. And whether they can do even that, I don't know, but I think they're using a combination of political, civilian, and very hard-hitting military means to pursue a just good enough solution. I don't think they're trying to remake the place into Switzerland.
Right. One former Clinton administration official was quoted in yesterday's Times as saying that had Obama lost the health care vote, he would have been politically damaged, and that would have had an effect on everything else. But the major transformational consequence of winning isn't a political boost, but the fact that he is learning on the job, the message is that he is starting to come of age as a leader. Do you think that's true?
Well, he clearly has a spring in his step and his voice at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's been as inept as the most extreme punditry has said, and he probably isn't going to have as smooth sailing as some of the more glowing comments this week suggest. I mean, let's face it, right now, being president of the United States amidst all of these international and terrible economic crises and with the bitter polarization in the country is not an easy thing. But if he had lost this, Democrats would have sat home in November. Now there's at least a chance that enough Democrats will and independents will turn out to mitigate the losses that the Democrats will certainly suffer this November under any circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Is the next issue, he was criticized for taking this on first and for spending a whole year on the issue of health care. Obviously, the economy is still number one. So many people don't have jobs or they're underemployed. They may have some health insurance now, but they need work. They need money, income. Has the president taken this on? Does he need to take it on in a very large way, as was suggested when he first took office?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think he has taken on keeping the economy from going into a total tailspin. But there's a real question as to whether what the president is proposing and whether what the Democrats and others in Congress are prepared to enact is in any way adequate to the loss of jobs that is really, in my opinion, the most grievous crisis we face. I mean, Americans believe in work. They want to work. And that's where people get meaning in life as well as income. And we've got to find a way to boost the creation of sustainable jobs. I hope they'll undertake that with new energy, even though I don't think the Republicans in Congress will allow any major initiatives to go through. I still think it's worth it to be seen to be proposing and trying.
You don't think that any Republicans, so we're looking at a presidency where there will be Republicans always in opposition to whatever comes forward from Democrats?
Well, you know, so far it's been very, very difficult to get Democrats to vote for anything. They voted for a almost pitifully scaled down jobs bill that was mainly tax cuts. I think they may be able to get a few Republicans to come over in the Senate to allow some kind of reform of Wall Street practices to pass. Whether they would be able to have what I think they need, which is aggressive public spending to save and stimulate job creation, I don't think Republicans will vote for that.
Mm. How aggressive public spending? Are you talking about a New Deal kind of spending?
Well, I don't know about that, but you know, from the beginning, there were lots of economists who believed that the original stimulus needed to be much larger than it was. And I'll just give you an example. I mean, many states are facing crises that are getting worse and worse, and they're laying off teachers and policemen and public workers of various kinds. And if they could just protect those jobs, that would have a ripple effect, creating more jobs in the private sector. But I don't know that they can get that through.
Mm-hmm. I've been struck the last few weeks, and it's made headlines for a while, but then it goes away. The number of schools closing, I mean, half a district closing in some major cities in this country.
Yeah, and libraries are closing, and police forces are cutting back, and this is a very serious matter. I mean, the other thing that's quite serious is youth unemployment, and the Democrats tried to get a youth unemployment summer bill through, and the Republicans refused. You know, I think it's a combination. Republicans right now are very, very extreme in their views and seem to believe that you could stimulate jobs by cutting back public spending in a crisis. There's just no economist really who would agree with that. But I think the other thing is there are some Republicans who really do not want to see Democrats succeed. So I think this is the real issue. I mean, a lot of people say Americans are going to be voting on health care reform in November. I don't believe that. I think they're going to be voting on the economy.
Mm-hmm. Well, things happen so rapidly, health care reform will have been over by a few months, right?
Well, it will. I mean, a few parts of it will begin to be implemented, and they may be liked by people. The people who are most opposed are not going to stay home, but they're upset about a lot of things, and I just think the economy is going to be quite important in people's minds, as it should be.
Mm-hmm. I'm having a hard time understanding the source of a lot of the anger, and it's very real that's out there. And let's talk for a few moments before we go to phone calls about Sarah Palin and the Tea Party. I felt so uncomfortable for John McCain. It was such a strange thing to see her, the headliner, wasn't it, for him? It was weird.
But well, he's desperate. I mean, he's trying to stave off a right-wing challenge.
Right. And all those people who came to see her, some were saying that it's not really over health care, that's not the anger, that it's something deeper here, that it's a change in demographics, that it's a country that's becoming less white and more Hispanic and Asian and African American, that there's something else at play. Is there something else at play?
Well, anti-government populist movements bubble up periodically in American history. I don't think it's just about health care, and I don't think it's especially not about the details of this health care policy, because if you think about it, the health care reform got more and more cautious as the months went by.
Mm-hmm.
The liberal parts of it were mostly shed, and by the end, however, the hysteria was just as intense. So I have a student who's doing a little bit of work with Tea Party people. Many of them, they're all white. Many of them are older. Some of them have been hit very hard by the nature of the housing crisis and the financial meltdown, which has hurt a lot of independent contractors and small business people. And there are a fair number of older people who they may be on Medicare and Social Security, but they're very worried about the shift of government expenditures toward covering the health care of others that they see as different. And I do think that any tension over immigration, as much as tension over black-white relations, is not too far beneath the surface in a lot of this. The sense that somebody might get something from government that they don't deserve, mm-hmm. and the somebodies are poorer people, including immigrants, or rich companies that get bailed out. That's the nature of this anger. And many of the people are white, higher income, or older, and they will vote in the midterm elections.
We welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour is Theda Skocpol, professor of government and sociology at Harvard University. It is our All Things Political segment. Our phone number, a couple lines are open if you'd like to join the conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. So far, we've talked about what the president has learned from health care reform. Does he have his mojo back? Would you say yes or no? His trip to Afghanistan. The Tea Party meeting, Sarah Palin, the headliner for John McCain and his tough reelection bid in Arizona, why people are angry, the meaning of the health care reform, immigration, nuclear arms deal worked out last week, and, well, we've covered a lot of territory already, but there is more. So we'll be with you in just a moment. The email is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, the United States has spent $6 billion to implement an Afghan police force. Our guest says that the money has not been well spent. There's not much of a police force. All right, let's go to phone calls. Sherry is our first caller from Duluth. Hi, Sherry.
Hi. Your comment right before you picked up my call sort of fits my comment and maybe question. So much of this is concern about, you know, not putting out a stimulus that large or the health plan. A lot of the argument against it had to do with, of course, money. And is anyone anywhere talking about how much we are spending in these useless, well, my opinion, wars that really are not going to get us anything but further in debt? The figures are just phenomenal and could help with our schools and our infrastructure and our health care and our job stimulus. I mean, there's money there just running out of our treasury.
Professor Skocpol.
Yes, you know, Sherry, you're absolutely right. The real deficit crisis was caused by a rash move into Iraq at enormous expense, human and economic. The continuing costs of winding down the Iraq war and of continuing the Afghanistan war, those are a major part, along with the huge tax cuts for the wealthiest people in the country that have caused the big deficit we're in. I do think that those are part of the picture. I understand the controversies about the Afghan war. I think Obama is continuing to wind down the Iraq war and shifting some of those resources. But going forward, we're going to have to find a way to make sure that the most privileged Americans pay their share. And probably all of us are going to have to pay for some of these investments in our health care and education that we so badly need.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Sherry. You had something else.
Well, is anyone talking about how much of that money, though, is going into this and whether that's a smart thing for us to be doing? Everyone, I suppose, is just afraid to be called weak on defense.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the campaign I watched, Barack Obama was very clear that he was going to wind down the Iraq war and that he was going to continue and intensify the Afghanistan struggle, and that's exactly what he's done. I do think winding down the Iraq war will eventually generate some savings. They're not going to be adequate to pay for all of these social needs, given the terrible hole that we've dug ourselves over the past decade. Remember, Bill Clinton left the country with a surplus, and that was given away.
And thank you so much, Sherry, for your call. We go to Al from Madison next. Hi, Al.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Okay, how are you?
Well, I had a couple comments for your for you and for your guest. I appreciate the call-in. Two things that come to my mind as to the reason why people are angry over this health care, the reason why I'm angry over the health care is two. First, it drastically affects my family. I've read part of the bill. Some of my health care that I currently have, I will no longer have Some of the benefits that I currently have, I will no longer have. And two, as a manager who's responsible for people regionally and who has been responsible for people worldwide in seven different locations around the world, all with more socialized medicine, as you would put it, or more universal coverage, I've seen dramatic problems with that. Prior to my leaving my last employer, I was managing people in the Netherlands and in Japan, both which have systems that were universal. And as I left, they were at a 50% tax rate, and then they were starting to pay premiums on their health care because they could no longer afford it. The issue that I see here is that people ignore the fact that there are a lot of hardworking people in the United States that worked hard to get to where they are, and they're now going to be put at a lower level of care and a lower level of coverage based on this health care, and they're upset. They're quite angry. It has nothing to do with race. It has nothing to do with, you know, these other issues that you brought up earlier, just plain and simple. These people are angry because you're taking away coverage that they've worked hard to either negotiate or work hard to make.
Right. What coverage is being taken away from you?
Well, I currently have a health savings account and a high deductible health plan. And as a result of this, my deductibles are going to go up, and my ability to save on a tax savings, which is the upside of me not having to have a lower deductible and premiums, is getting cut less than half. So what I'm winding up with here is not only are my deductibles going to go way up, they're going to come way, my ability to save and offset that cost is going to go way down. And currently my deductibles are about $7,500 a year, and I'm only allowed legally by law to save $6,000 a year per my family. Next year that goes upwards of $11,000 to $12,000, and my health savings account tax rebate goes down to $2,500. Mm-hmm. So you can see where my coverages have just been shot. It's terrible. And people don't recognize that. And I think the details are in the bill. I've read a good portion of that, and I really have listened to NPR and WPR the last couple months, and the people you have on here haven't read hardly any of it, because if they did, they would know detail like this. So people in Indiana, for instance, and people at my company, and people who in my group particularly, I had, when we started the high deductible health plan, we only had one person in it. That was me. Now out of my group, I've got over 50% of my people in it, and they love it because they have control over their money and they have the ability to save, and they question the doctors. That's all going away.
And no, I don't think it's all going away. I mean, I do know quite a bit about the detail of the plan, and I certainly respect the fact that you're talking about the content of the plan, and I don't disagree at all that there will be some changes in some things for people. The savings accounts are still there. There are steps taken to make sure that the money is actually used for health care, and it's not simply a tax deduction for better-off people. The other thing I would say is that I do think, on the whole, companies are going to be better off in the future when everybody is covered at some basic level and everybody is contributing to the system. It's very easy to game a system in which some people who don't think they're going to need coverage stay out of the insurance system, and then when they suddenly get sick or get hurt in an accident, turn up, and the rest of us have to pay the costs. My brother-in-law is a businessman in West Virginia. He has struggled for years to try to cover the employees in his small business, and he will now get tax help to do that. Your employees at your various sites will have recourse to some way to buy coverage. If not through small business purchases in the exchanges, then through their own. And in the end, that's going to make for a smoother operating economy for all of us.
So if you're a person who has a health savings account, that's sort of like your own private system, right?
Well, those survive, but he's right. The terms on them have changed to make it a little bit, it's not as easy for people to use them for general tax savings. They have survived as a way for people to contribute to their own purchase of health coverage, however.
Are there many people who have that? I just haven't heard the term for a long time.
Well, there are, but not a huge number. And the problem with health savings accounts as a solution is that they don't work for a lot of people, especially people with high costs
right.
of health care.
Yeah. Thanks, Al, very much for your call. Lance is next from Madison. Hi, Lance.
Good morning.
Hi.
I am enjoying the conversation, and I want to start out here by making it clear I've been really pretty supportive of what the president's been doing over the last few months. And with my limited training in economics through grad school and college, I am someone who believes in Keynesian economics and spending as a way of jump-starting us out of a recession like this. But and your guest had said earlier in the hour that she thought what he needed, what the president needed to do over the next several months is to offer a series of job creation measures, even if the Republicans block those, that would be something that the voters might respond to well. What I've heard, which makes sense to me, though, in this situation, is that our current financial problems were really not the result of unemployment or a lack of consumer confidence. Those were really the things that followed the initial crisis. And that this recession is really the result of problems within the financial sector and the freezing up of credit and the fact that we couldn't find private money in order to invest in the economy and create jobs. If that's true, I'd like to know if your guest agrees with that, first of all, but if it's true, would traditional job creation measures really be successful in kicking us out of this recession? Or does the solution really have to come in thawing up this private credit industry and finding private money that we can invest in job creation? And if that's the case, then wouldn't the series of traditional job creation spending packages from the president be perceived as fairly ineffective measures from a party that's too often seen as just either taxing and spending or borrowing and spending? And couldn't that end up hurting him more in November than it would helping him?
That's a good question.
Yes, it is a good question. And I think you're right that this crisis was kicked off by a financial meltdown. And we know that financial crises can often be very persistent because they make it hard for private investment to go forward. I think a lot of what Obama and his team have been trying to do, and with some success, is to work out ways to make the financial institutions sound again and to get them lending to businesses. They've also used some governmental means to make sure that businesses have access to credit. And I do not in any way want to suggest that those are not primary and important. And I think that the primary goal here is to get businesses investing again and to revive consumer confidence. The only thing I would say is that when you have states counteracting federal measures by laying off large numbers of public employees, that has a depressing effect that ripples through the economy. And if you could find a way to use federal support to tide the states over, that would be good. And youth unemployment worries me as a social scientist, because we know that if young people have trouble entering a labor market, and they do when there's a big down and persistent downturn, that can affect their entire career after that. Now, some of what Obama's about to sign into law, the improved Pell Grants and the somewhat more generous loans for college students will help the youth situation, allowing more youth to actually improve their skills during this downturn.
And Matt, how did that get to be a part of the health care bill? I didn't get that.
Well, see, that's one of the ironies here. I mean, I live in Massachusetts, and I can tell you that when Scott Brown was elected here, people just thought, Democrats at least, thought it was the end of the world. They thought everything would end. Not only did they manage to find a way to finish the health reform process, and remember, both the House and the Senate with 60 votes had passed bills, they found a way to do the kinds of things that would normally be done in a conference committee and then send it back to each House with majority votes in the Senate. But they took advantage of that opportunity to finish the job on the student lending reforms, which basically said we're going to stop paying banks to make loans that the public guarantees. That's crazy.
mm-hmm. and use those resources instead to expand access to higher education through Pell Grants and loans, they made use of the fact that they had originally allowed for a 51 vote in the Senate to finish that. And if they hadn't done that, they never would have gotten that through because Ben Nelson of Nebraska, you know, he doesn't want to change the student loan system. He didn't want to.
Huh. The workings, the process is quite fascinating, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, but they did that in a completely legitimate way. The 51 vote process in the Senate is there to allow votes on things that affect the federal deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And this student loan thing did. It basically stopped wasting taxpayers' money, and some of the money that was saved was used to reduce the deficit going forward, and some of it was used to improve loans to needy college students.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next. Thanks very much for your call, Lance. Gary is next from Merrill. Hi, Gary.
Yes, hello. Well, a little comment about Keynesian economics. He did say that in bad times, a government should spend money to bring us out of a recession, but he also said that in good times, the government should be setting money aside to have during for the bad times, and of course, we've never did that. And as I look back, I'm 58, as I look back through Clinton and Bush, I almost think that if I was to hear someday that there was like an international conspiracy, and of course I don't believe in that, but it's the only thing that would make sense. When they took our money and they sent our manufacturing jobs overseas and they paid these major corporations to go to a communist country, what would we think would happen? So the people that are left here that create the wealth for all these programs, the people that grow things and make things, who get wealth out of basically nothingness, that kind of people is going away. We don't put any interest in those kind of people. And the kind of people that just take, and these people going to college, probably half of them shouldn't even be in college, that's where the money goes, but there's not going to be a return on that. And it's going to be like Greece, where at some point, the international community, they're going to downgrade our dollar. We're going to start paying more interest, and then the whole thing is going to fall apart. We're riding on top now because it was strong dollar, but when that falls to pieces, what's going to save us at that point?
Well, you know, I agree with you that these changes in the way we fit into the international economy, basically allowing American manufacturing to die and not finding ways to invest in emerging industries that have international clout while we specialize in financial services or maneuvering, that has helped to set up this crisis. I mean, I don't agree with you that most people who go to college are not going to do anything worthwhile. But I think one area where we should be thinking about investing for the future is in energy efficiency type jobs and in the most innovative agriculture and manufacturing. You know, Keynes did say that in good times you should build up a buffer for the bad times. I have to remind everybody that President Clinton left the budget in surplus. The other side of the picture is not just what we do in good times and bad times, but whether we give tax breaks to the wealthiest people at the expense of investing in industrial retooling, in education and health, and in making sure that we have an American economy that can make things and compete effectively in the world. So I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I really do.
Thank you, Gary, for your call. It's All Things Political, Monday at 9 here on the Ideas Network. And our guest this hour is Professor Theda Skocpol, Victor S. Thomas Professor of Government and Sociology at Harvard University. Our phone number, we have one line open if you'd like to take it, 800-486-8655. The email address, talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls. Kevin is our next caller from Green Bay. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually called about health care. I wanted to just make a quick comment about that gentleman, previous caller. I don't think he had his facts right. And let's remember that it was Bill Clinton and the Democrats who balanced the budget. And it was the war that put us into debt. And the fact of the matter is, dealing with health care is an important issue. Now, I find it a little disingenuous. First, let me just say I'm a veteran, and I'm a Democrat, and I'm a pro-life conservative Democrat. And I've been paying attention to politics. I've been paying attention, and I have my facts, I think, pretty good. First of all, if we get rid of big government, who's going to protect us against big business? But that aside, I personally feel the Tea Partiers are being manipulated in some regards by big business. That aside, I have the VA health care, so I don't need health care. But I find it disingenuous that the Republicans would be so pro-health or pro-life at birth, and yet so quickly to throw people overboard after, you know, when they're ill and they're sick. I can't believe at all that I'm hearing this argument about letting people suffer. 30-40 million people who have sent their sons and daughters into combat, and we're not even trying to help them out. I can't even believe this. I can't even believe it's up for discussion. The fact of the matter is that those people, that those 30-40 million people, sent their sons and daughters to fight for this country, and they have a right to be relieved from pain and suffering. And I think they're just taking what they can get for their own selves, and I don't think they care about anybody else. And I just find it amazing that they would be saying, you know, all these arguments against health care and against helping people when they're in their most pain.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Professor?
Well, I think that it's true that we're going to be a better country and a more efficient economy when we make sure that all of our citizens have access to affordable health care. That's what this legislation is about. It may not be perfect. We'll have to fine-tune it as we go forward. But this past week, we have made a commitment as important as the initial commitment for Social Security and the commitment again for Medicare for the elderly. And I think as time passes that Americans will agree that this was the right way forward. A lot of people right now are very scared because we're in an economic downturn and they're worried that they might lose health care they have. But I don't think it's going to turn out that way. And the caller made a passionate appeal to the core moral values here, which are indeed life values. And I also want to say I hope Green Bay does well in football after the Patriots. They're my favorite team.
Are they really? Oh, how can they not be? They're such a good, they're our church here in Wisconsin. Yeah. You know, that's the Sunday morning church. I'm wondering if you're particularly troubled by, and the media has made a lot of this, and maybe rightfully so, of the spitting of the racial epithets, of the bricks through windows, et cetera, that have accompanied these this health care bill. Do you think that that nastiness is unusual in this regard? Would it have happened if it had been some other issue? Has there been enough condemnation of these kinds of acts on the part of the Republican leadership?
No, there has not. And I think that is something that they ought to be held to public account for. There are extremists all over the political spectrum, but we have the right to expect that our elected leaders at all levels of government will openly distance themselves from, denounce, and not encourage acts of personal maliciousness or violence. I was particularly disturbed by the cutting of the gas line to the brother of a candidate a representative in Virginia. Think about that for a minute. All the time we hear of incidences where a cut gas line by mistake results in blown up house and killed family. That could have happened. And You know, the Republican leader in the House is actually saying things like his colleague from Cincinnati, his Democratic colleague, dare not go home after voting for health care. He'll be a dead man. Well, that's just not acceptable.
No, it is not acceptable. Let's go to Jim from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to talk about a Palm Sunday homily that I saw or heard yesterday from a lady who's the deacon at our church. And was talking about, you know, just the basic values and the where the country is heading. And this applies not only to the lifestyle that we live here, but I think the way that we support that lifestyle by our actions overseas. And she was pointing out that John D. Rockefeller, one time when asked how much is enough, he said just a little bit more. And then and talked about our obsession with in our society, the way we live, that we have to have more and more and more. And a lot of this is manifest in our foreign policy. And she pointed out at the time that the Roman legions, you know, controlled the many areas in the world, and they would always try to take as much as they could out of the wealth and labor of the resources and the labor of the people of the countries, and how they would also maintain their power by supporting the rich in the countries that they had conquered and let them run things for them because that made them easier for them to run things. And she talked about two columns heading into the city, one the Romans with their legions and their military might, and the other one was the followers of Jesus. And she asked, which column do we want to be in? You know, what's our commitment to live on less and to oppose the end of militarism that is manifest really on a bipartisan basis in our foreign policy?
Yeah, well, that sounds like a lovely Palm Sunday homily. You know, I think that we do have to ask tough questions about our foreign policy, and we have to ask our leaders to support development for majority and good health and peace and non-corrupt government across the world. At the same time, and I may be a little bit more conservative Democrat than some listeners to Wisconsin Public Radio want to hear, this country does face a serious military and terrorist threats, and we do have to use force to fight those threats. That's the trick. We have to be discerning in what we support.
Do you have any more information? I just heard this on the news this morning coming to work about the terrorist bombings in Moscow today. Who was behind that? Are there people claiming responsibility for that?
I don't know. All I saw was that the Russian authorities were saying it was Islamist terrorists. And, you know, maybe that is true and maybe it isn't. I think we always have to examine these claims. So I don't know who's claimed control. I mean, these kinds of terrorist incidents in that, you know, many of our European allies have also faced, and we, of course, faced on 9/11, they're very frightening.
Yes.
And it is not a small matter to figure out the right combination of wise politics, law enforcement, and tough military and intelligence action that's needed to stop it. I think we all have a stake in stopping these things.
Thanks, Jim, for your call. Ivy is next from Evansville. Hi, Ivy.
Hi. Just some quick background. My brother, who's 52, several years ago almost died of a preventable heart disease. And he didn't go to the doctor because he was starting a business and he didn't have money and he kept putting it off. And he's very fortunate to have pulled through. And it ended up, it was at the expense of the government because he had no health insurance. Now, since he's disabled, he can't work. And, I mean, both of us have worked, you know, paper out since middle school. So this is my hard-working brother who tried to start a business and it failed. And there are so many people who might want to start a business or have a creative idea that may be afraid or were afraid to go out and do so because, you know, you're taking such risks. If you already have some health care, if you're one of the lucky people, you're not going to want to go out and give that up and take a chance so much. I was wondering if anybody's done any research on, you know, people that might want to strike out on their own, and if with changes in healthcare, this might influence some new businesses popping up.
Okay.
Oh, I
You know, I really think so. I mean, I think it's phenomenon is called job lock, that people who are in a job that has some kind of health coverage, the health coverage has become less and less adequate over time in many jobs, but people have it or they're married to someone who has it, they are reluctant to move because they would lose access to the broad insurance pools that provide affordable health coverage. The changes that have been legislated now, when they are fully carried through, which is going to take 4 to 8 years, will free Americans to be more creative and to move from jobs and to found small businesses, secure in the knowledge that they will be able to be part of broad purchasing pools to get health insurance at a reasonable cost. It's a transition that's going to take a while, but it is going to be good for people's health and very good for our economy.
Thank you, Ivy, for your call. Tom from River Falls. Hi.
Hi. Couple points here. You had a caller, a previous caller, who said he managed people in other countries with so-called socialized medicine and claimed that they pay, you know, this 50% tax. Well, I also lived and worked abroad for 15 years in Europe, and that's misinformation. When you compare apples to apples, the Europeans often will call their health insurance premiums a tax. They'll call their college tuitions, they'll call that a tax. So if you wrap that all into American tax system, call our monthly premiums a tax and our tuitions, we're well above 50% with all those costs. So often you hear this, it's misinformation, okay? My wife and I, who's from Europe, we compare all the time to see which is better, and we find that we actually pay more here for the similar services than you do over there. And another thing, property tax. Like in Germany, they pay almost zero property tax because that's wrapped into their income tax. That's how they fund the schools and those types of things. So apples to apples, we pay more and actually get less. And then the other thing with the VA, that's socialized healthcare, government doctors, and the surveys show very high satisfaction rate for that. So we already have socialized medicine in America. Medicare, single payer, a little different, private doctors, but government pays, also very high satisfaction. So we don't have to look abroad. We can look here in this country and see that it works. Another thing, the CBO, nonpartisan, that's a referee, says this will reduce the deficit. So, you know, just the facts. And then Clinton, when he raised his, when he did his tax program in the early 90s on the higher incomes, the GOP was yelling, oh, my God, Armageddon, it's going to destroy the economy. Well, the opposite happened, and we got, what, a balanced budget, surplus, and peace and prosperity. So that's my point.
All right, Tom, thank you. Professor.
I've lost you. It's broken up.
Oh, really?
Can you call me again?
Oh, you can't hear me either? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what in the world happened. We'll try and call her back for a few final words here. We can hear her fine, but evidently she can't hear us. Just while we're trying to reach her, we will, the second hour of our program, be talking about Afghanistan. If you've seen the latest cover of Newsweek magazine, there's a very large story on this, and it was also printed in several other publications, ProPublica. And there were three authors to this. One of the authors of this piece will be with us to talk about the Afghan police force and how $6 billion, the authors believe, that we have paid to put together an Afghan police force has just been money down the drain. And so we will be discussing that this second hour. Well, okay, we'll try. Can you hear us now?
Yep, I'm back.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We could hear you just fine. Well, we have about a minute left. So where do you think the president is going now? What would you recommend? What's the next issue to take on? Is it jobs? Is it what do you think?
Well, I think they're likely to emphasize jobs and economic recovery and the financial regulation of Wall Street to make sure that the kinds of practices that got us into this crisis in the first place cannot recur.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect those to be the two big issues over coming months.
Okay. I want to thank you so much for being with us this hour.
It's been a great guest. Pleasure. I enjoy talking with people in Wisconsin, and thank you for having me.
And you like the Green Bay Packers, too. So, all right. Thank you. Our guest this hour of the program, Professor Theda Skocpol, Victor S. Thomas Professor of Government and Sociology at Harvard University. She does work in a number of areas, including comparative politics and American politics. She has written articles and books that have been widely cited in political science literature and have won many awards. And she's recently launched new projects on the development of U.S. higher education and on the transformations of U.S. federal policies in the Obama era. Thanks for all of your calls as well, everybody. I just want to remind you, in case you are just tuning into us for the first time, I know some of you just have discovered Wisconsin Public Radio. By golly, we do this program every Monday, All Things Political. We look at what's been going on the week before, and it's been a particularly active week for All Things Political. You can suggest guests as well. We are on Facebook now, which has turned out great, so go to the Kathleen Dunn Show and make your suggestions. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the show, and to John Treader.